I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you didn't see, because you're watching football, you had a ballpark full of Ohtani fans. Maybe some of them Dodgers fans too, but Ohtani fans in Miami, in South Florida. But honestly, I feel like they represent what was happening around the world. On Thursday evening, and credit to MLB Network for showing extended coverage of the Dodgers game at the Marlins. But even knowing that Shohei Ohtani was approaching this 50-50 plateau, this rarefied air, this category of baseball player and baseball success where no one has ever been, even knowing that he was approaching it and understanding that it could happen in any of the final few games that the Dodgers were playing, we were not prepared for what we saw on Thursday night. It may have been one of the greatest offensive performances in baseball history. And I only say may have been because I've not seen them all and I've not done my research about best games ever. I just know that Shohei set a whole bunch of franchise records, had some career bests along the way, and became baseball's first 50-50 athlete. But in such a demonstrative performance that even from Shohei Ohtani, this was astounding. We could absolutely spend the rest of this show just on his game. We won't, because we have a lot to do, and it's the start of football. Week 3 in the NFL, week 4 in college football. We also have Guardians who have clinched a playoff spot, and it was the end of the WNBA regular season with the playoffs on the horizon. So we're not even to October yet. This is pre-October, if you will. It's the hors d'oeuvres for October. It's cocktail hour for October. But to start with this game on a Thursday night with the NFL taking place, you must know how impressive and important and impactful the 6-for-6 with 5 extra base hits, including 3 home runs, 2 doubles, 2 stolen bases, and 10 runs batted in for Shohei Ohtani. You must know, by starting with Shohei, it's because it was historic. And you know me, I'm all about witnessing history when it comes to sports, or really anything, just a history buff. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday night. We will usher in a Friday. At A-Law Radio is where you can find me online, also on our Facebook page. I did share the link to my blog earlier on Thursday. Lots of you responding, so I appreciate that. Also have goodies like our podcast and polls and other videos that we like to share in either of those places. So it's a good spot to connect with us, regardless of which one you use. I do read almost everything that comes across each of our social media sites. And our phone number is 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. If you can come up with a more impressive single game or single season performance than what we've just witnessed, with still 9 games to go from Shohei Ohtani, I've watched it multiple times, but it's also a lot of fun to listen to it when you realize how dominant he was in this game in South Florida.
Next stolen base for Shohei Ohtani. Not only would be number 50, but he would set the record for the most stolen bases in a single season by a Japanese-born player. The player he'd be passing is manager Dave Roberts. There they go. Ohtani down to third, and he is safe at third base.
Just a late tag. And Norby, the third baseman, was playing very deep, which I was surprised at how deep he was playing, knowing that Ohtani might take off. So the double steal in the first inning.
Stolen base number 50 for Ohtani, and they are standing at Lone Depot Park. Here's the old one pitch coming to Shohei. Swings, hits a drive, deep right field, number 49 for Ohtani, an upper deck shot. It's a two-run homer. The Dodgers lead it 9-3. Shohei Ohtani is now tied for the all-time Dodgers single-season home run record with 49, and he is one away from the first-ever 50-50 season. Oh, what a blast by Shohei Ohtani. He is a one-man show. And the pitch coming to Shohei Ohtani. He swings, hits a drive to left. This ball's back. There it is. Number 50. The first player in the history of Major League Baseball to have a 50-50 season. He is incredible. Shohei Ohtani with an opposite field home run. 50-50. What a day for Shohei. He is the new all-time single-season home runs leader for the Dodgers and the first ever Dodger with a 50 home run season. Shohei Ohtani is incredible. He is one of a kind. Here's the pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep right field. He has done it. It's the first time Ohtani in his career has had a three home run game. Can you believe this? 10 runs batted in for Ohtani. That's also a career high. 51 home runs for Shohei Ohtani. This is the show that never ends. Can you believe this man?
Tim Neverett on Dodgers Radio. And if you haven't seen or heard the Joe Davis calls on Dodgers TV, those are also tremendous. So we will let you hear his version and his reaction a little bit later on. But what amazing calls and the history interwoven with this single game achievement. By the way, if you want to see all of these hits, five extra base hits, including three home runs, the two stolen bases, the 10 RBI, the montage is up on our show Twix at Amy After Hours. And something that stood out to me is how animated we see Shohei Ohtani. He's not always that way. He can be relatively even keel, doesn't smile a ton when he's out there on the base paths. Maybe he'll crack a smile every now and then. Now, when he's in the bullpen, went not this year, when he's in the dugout, he is very engaged with his teammates, and they go through all the different handshakes, and he runs through the gamut when he has the home run, as they all do. And so they definitely like him, and there's not... Well, there is, a little bit of a language barrier, but he does speak and understand English. He did address the clubhouse in English when he was done. And so he's one of the guys. You don't see that a lot out on the base paths, but he was animated on this night and definitely celebrating once that 50th home run came off his bat. It was very clear that it would be leaving the park, and he was fist pumping and was excited, kind of like back to the end of the World Baseball Classic, not this past spring, but the year before when he was fired up to play with Japan. And I can imagine part of his excitement is also the Dodgers clinching a playoff spot. He's not participated in the MLB postseason. The Angels have not made it since he got to Major League Baseball, since he got to the United States. So as the Dodgers clinch at the very least a wild card, he is now assured of competing in October for the first time. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Again, all those calls there on the Dodgers radio network. And Shohei, he was toasted in the locker room, so we'll get to that coming up. But through his interpreter, addressing the media about being the only player in this exclusive, very exclusive, 50 home run, 50 stolen base club.
I'm glad that the team won, and it was something I wanted to get over as quickly as possible. And, you know, it's something that I'm going to cherish for a very long time.
It was remarkable. The individual performance tonight, remarkable. And I just think that, you know, with this game of baseball, it was a win for Major League Baseball.
It definitely was. And Dave Roberts also makes the point that people all over the globe were watching, which I think is underscored by the fact that in the stadium, you had more people cheering for Ohtani than you did for the home team. And maybe that's not a surprise considering that the Marlins are the Marlins, and that everywhere the Dodgers go, they're like the Yankees or the Red Sox. They bring...
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fans with them, or they have fans locally. But as Shohei is building and putting this game together, he not only did he get more animated and more effusive and more excited, but the fans themselves were just really into it, which was a lot of fun. So this is kind of crazy, but 27 days ago, so not even a month ago, he reached the 40-40 club. And that was an exclamation point because it was a walk-off grand slam. Then he had those four games against the Braves in which he had neither a home run nor a stolen base. And then, boom, right on the heels of those four games, I don't know if we can call them a drought necessarily, but right on the heels of those four games with the Braves, he turns on the afterburners, if you will. And it helps that the Dodgers have been able to tee off on the Marlins pitching. But they've scored, what, 20 runs in a game? And I think they've had double digits in most of these games that they've played against the Marlins. Let's see. I take it back. There's been a lot of offense. They had 8 on Wednesday night, and they had 9 in a loss on Tuesday night. So they've put up a lot of offense in this particular series. But he has he's kind of gone from 0 to 100 miles per hour in just these couple games and takes it right off the table. So, 3 home runs for the first time in a single game, 10 RBIs, which, of course, is a career high. The 6 hits in one game, also a career high. And apparently, even Ohtani wasn't expecting this.
To be honest, I'm the one probably most surprised. I have no idea where this came from, but I'm glad I performed well today.
I have no idea where this came from. And some really neat reactions from other players. Miguel Rojas, I almost cried, to be honest with you. It was a lot of emotion because of everything that happens behind the scenes that we get to witness every single day. It's a pretty cool moment. We all know what he's capable of doing, but for him to reach that mark, it's pretty amazing. So, it's exciting that he got it out of the way, but also on the same day, the Dodgers are able to clinch a postseason berth. And Dave Roberts, with his champagne glass in hand, and everybody in the Dodgers clubhouse had the champagne glasses ready to raise, he paid tribute to Shohei.
First thing, you guys, Shohei was the player of the series, rightfully so. Let's raise a glass of champagne also because... this is a game that's been played for over 200 years, and he has done something that's never been done in this game. And it's really unprecedented. And so, Shohei, cheers to you on something really spectacular, man. Congratulations.
So they were able to do a toast to Shohei, and actually Shohei addressed the clubhouse himself. A couple of words in English, which was fun, and there were lots of cheering. But also, they've got more on their plate, similar to, say, the Yankees and how they addressed locking up a wild card spot on Wednesday night. You can tell the Dodgers, they're looking ahead as well.
This is the first step. We all know that. The talent is our floor. The talent in this room is the floor. The character and the fight is the ceiling for all of us. So, guys, we got to count on each other to fight and show the character that we all believe we have, and we know who we are, to play that last game and win that last game in October. So cheers to you guys. Congratulations, fellas. Everybody, congrats, guys.
I don't know about you, but I cannot wait to see him on the postseason stage. Because of his talent, absolutely. Because we've never seen a season like this, yes. I don't even care who wins. I just want to get as many games with him on the postseason stage. And I feel the same way about a guy like, say, Mike Trout. It's unfortunate that we have not seen Mike in the playoffs since 2014. It's been a decade. He's one of the best players of this generation, and we've not seen him in the playoffs since 2014, and then only three games, all of which were losses, right? So he's never won a playoff game with the Angels. Now, I know he's been hurt a lot, and he's, I don't want to say to blame, that's an odd way to put it. It partly falls at his feet because of the fact that he's been injured a bunch over the last few years specifically. But to have Shohei and to have the Dodgers with Shohei, they become even greater draw. And he needs to be playing in October for baseball to truly capitalize on his popularity internationally, globally. Yeah, he needs to be playing when the stakes are the highest and when the spotlight is the harshest. And I'm looking forward to it. Hopeful, the same thing when you talk about other players that transcend their sport, but also transcend their region. Baseball has become very much a regional sport, as opposed to national, where every team has some interest in parts of the country. That's what the NFL is, and in large part because of fantasy football and betting, I get it. But we're just so engaged with the NFL. There are fewer games, so it's easier to follow on a weekly basis. When it comes to baseball, fans are far more engaged in their own teams, maybe their divisions, than they are about what's happening around the league. It's much more of a regional sport now. And so to have Shohei Ohtani and guys like Aaron Judge, we could talk about the talents. Ellie De La Cruz is one that would love to see on the postseason stage. And I'm just naming a few, so no need to be upset if I don't name your fit. Corbin Carroll being as part of the playoffs last year. There's some incredible talents in Major League Baseball, and that really is available. And, well, that spectacle is available much more in October. And just like every team with its playoffs, when you get to the postseason, the big dance, as they call it, well, then you really get to see these guys in a spotlight. And what they do in October, a lot of times, will cement and solidify what they mean to the game. It's too early to talk legacy, but just in general. And I'm certain that there are people out there who will point to others and say, hey, they have a greater impact. He's only a DH. But let's remember that Shohei, moving forward, I mean, he could even pitch in the postseason. There's still a possibility of that. But he's also going to be a full-time starter, which is why the Dodgers were willing to pay him some of the money and wait for him to be healthy enough to pitch again. So congratulations to Shohei. So excited that we got a chance to see it. Can you think of a better individual game in baseball history? I mean, there have been guys who've hit four home runs in a single game, but this is pretty phenomenal overall. And the first 50-50 guy with 51 home runs and now 51 stolen bases, and still time to come. At A-Law Radio, on our Facebook page too, our phone number 855-212-4227. The Guardians and the Dodgers both clinch playoff spots to join the Brewers, who've already locked up the NL Central, and the Yankees, who clinched on Wednesday. So four of the spots are taken, and we'll get to more of baseball. But coming up after the update, we'll have a conversation with a Jets beat writer who was at MetLife for what appears to be a flipping of the script in the AFC East. Jets, Patriots. Oh, how things have changed. And we'll talk about Aaron Rodgers, home opener, more than a year in the making, straight ahead. Happy Almost Friday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Rodgers over center. Ball in the backfield. Rodgers, quick toss to the left side. It's caught by Lazard. Makes a man miss. Lazard still going. He's in. Touchdown. The Jets strike first. Lazard breaks away. Alex Austin couldn't bring him down. It's a 10-yard touchdown. Rodgers to Lazard. Shotgun, Rodgers. Hall to his left. Jets trying to add to their lead. Fake the handoff. Rodgers to his right. Throwing. Caught. Touchdown. Terrific grab by Garrett Wilson for the score. Aaron Rodgers with a BP. And the Jets now in front 20-3. 6:18 to go in the third.
It's time to pull on the pads and hit somebody on After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The calls with Ian Eagle on the Westwood One Radio Network. We'll hear some of the Jets play-by-play a little bit later on. We don't have any play-by-play for the Patriots. It was a tough night, an overwhelming and convincing victory by the New York Jets, which for too long have been dominated by the New England Patriots. Though Bill Belichick is no longer the head coach, he always made it a personal vendetta against the Jets. And remember, at the end of last year, the Jets were able to beat the Pats in Foxborough. But this was the first time that the Jets have been able to return the favor at home in, what is it, 8 games? So they had an 8 consecutive games that they'd lost at home versus these New England Patriots. But it's a different era and definitely a flip of the script. And more than a year in the making, Aaron Rodgers able to get that home debut that went so quickly off the rails in 23 when he lasted just the 4 snaps. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. The Jets' defense is the story in this game, in my opinion. But Aaron Rodgers looking mobile as much as he's going to, right? So looking comfortable, looking fluid. He did elude a pass rusher here or there, stepped up a little bit, moved around when the pocket would start to collapse a little. So we're not going to get the spry Aaron Rodgers. In fact, I think it was Breece Hall, one of the guys in his backfield, who was saying that the first time he saw Aaron run, he couldn't help but he had to laugh. And so this is not the same Aaron Rodgers that used to move all over the field and could take off himself. But he did hit all the angles, including the sidearms, and looked comfortable. So I don't think there's any doubt that he is past the injury and is confident himself again. 27 of 35, 281 yards, a couple of touchdowns. But the defense is really the story when you look at what they were able to do and how they were able to limit the Patriots. So yeah, it was total control for Aaron Rodgers when it came to the offense and conducting the offense and getting them up and down the field. It was a turnover-free game for the New York Jets as well. The only major issue with them is the 8 penalties for 106 yards. So that was, to me, something that stood out just because of the number of yards. But they were 3 for 4 in the red zone. They were 10 of 15 on third down. they really had their way. Nearly double the number of plays, not quite, but close. 2-1 when it came to the time of possession. So doubling up the 40 minutes to just 20 for the Patriots and 400 yards of offense. But man, it was the defense that really caught my attention and the way that they were swarming Jacoby Brissett all night.
Brissett in the shotgun. The Jets rush four. Brissett on his horse once again, and he'll be sacked. Another flag down. Quinnen Williams brings him down at the 40-yard line. He did unload the football. I think he may have gotten away with a dump-off pass before the sack, but there's going to be a holding penalty on top of Quinnen Williams' pressure of Jacoby Brissett.
And he's banged up. I mean, he has taken a beating tonight.
That's the call on Jets Radio with Bob Wischusen. So the final number, 7 sacks of Jacoby Brissett and the rookie Drake May, who played late in this game for New England. 15 additional quarterback hits. So not just the 7 sacks, 15 more hits. 1 takeaway, so a forced fumble. No touchdowns allowed to the Patriots and only 78 yards rushing, which was huge. So for Robert Saleh, the offense got on the board early, and the defense did the rest.
Part of the things that we've been talking about is to just get the defense a 2-score lead. And it was a 2-score lead, so I guess it was he just wanted to see something on defense.
Definitely saw something on defense. And as for Aaron Rodgers, it was his chance to revel in the fans' adoration, chanting his name toward the end of this game. He was all smiles, except for that weird exchange with Robert Saleh. Oh, goodness, though. So much made of it that doesn't need to be made of it. We'll talk about it with Antoine Staley of the New York Daily News when he joins us following the break. At A-Law Radio, our Facebook page, too. We'll have our Game of the Week poll up before long. Thanks so much for hanging out with us on this happy almost Friday. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Carlos Ortiz.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Thank you, Amy. This report is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your home and auto. Save when you bundle. Get a quote at progressive.com. The Jets dominated the Patriots, and it's starting to feel like Aaron Rodgers is back.
Shotgun, Rodgers. Hall to his left. Jets trying to add to their lead. Fake the handoff. Rodgers to his right. Throwing. Caught. Touchdown. Terrific grab by Garrett Wilson for the score. With a BP. And the Jets now in front 20-3. 6:18 to go in the third.
Iron Eagle and Westwood One Sports. Rodgers threw for 281 yards with a pair of touchdowns to Allen Lazard and Garrett Wilson. Quarterback Jacoby Brissett faced pressure all night. Wound up leaving the game in the fourth quarter with an injury, giving way to Drake May to make his NFL debut, but it was all Jets here as they roll 24-3. And baseball. Here's the updated list for Major League Baseball's 50-50 club.
On a 1-2, Ohtani sends one in the air. The other way, back it goes! Gone! One-of-a-kind player! One-of-a-kind season! Shohei Ohtani starts the 50-50 club!
Shohei Ohtani, that's it. That's the list. Call courtesy of Sportsnet LA. Ohtani with a 3-run home run night, swiping 2 bags, becomes the first player to hit at least 50 home runs and steal at least 50 bases in a single season as the Dodgers fry the Marlins by a score of 20-4. Final scores include Braves beating up the Reds 15-3, Rays double the Red Sox 4-2, Mets outslug the Phillies 10-6, Guardians gash the Twins 3-2, Blue Jays quiet the Rangers 4-0, Mariners slick by the Yankees 3-2, Rays double the Red Sox 4-2, Pirates topple the Cardinals 3-2. Nick Gonzalez with the go-ahead RBI single in the eighth. Orioles knock off the Giants 5-3. Cubs over the Nationals 7-6. Texas head coach Steve Sarkisian announced quarterback Arch Manning will make his first start on Saturday night against Louisiana Monroe, with Quinn Ewers still recovering from an injured oblique. I'm Carlos Ortiz.
855-212-4227. That's the number to get in touch with us, the Infinity Sports Network. Give us a call, 855-212-4227.
Takes the snap. Play action. Looks right. Pumps one. Throws right. Caught. Front right pylon. Garrett Wilson. That's a Jet touchdown. Garrett Wilson. Toe taps. Just inside the front right pylon. And Aaron Rodgers puts it right in his hands. And the Jets extend their lead.
Well, we're trying to change this whole attitude around here. You know, we're trying to build something special here. Get these fans to believe in us. They've been tortured for a long time. So last year was obviously a tough year. But it's good to be back. It's good to be healthy. So, again, so many people that I'm thankful for that got me to this point. But it's great to be a Jet. Great to have nights like this. And even better to have a weekend off.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I'll drink to that. Let's have a weekend off, shall we? Oh, wait, it's football season. But the Jets do get the mini bye after the victory against the Patriots at MetLife Stadium. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Online at A-Law Radio if you want to see the video of Shohei Ohtani's historic night. That's on our show Twix at Amy After Hours. We'll have the Game of the Week poll up momentarily on both Twix and Facebook. And our phone number, 855-212-4227. We're excited to welcome Antoine Staley after covering Thursday Night Football at MetLife Stadium. He's the Jets beat writer for the New York Daily News. And Antoine, I heard Aaron Rodgers call this a very special night. Why?
He's tremendous. I mean, look what he did offensively. I mean, he was 27 for 35, 281 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. And not only that, I mean, just to everything that he's gone through the last 12 months or so, getting back to this point and playing at a high level and, you know, beating the Patriots 24-3 on national TV. So, yeah, for a lot of it was a special night for a lot of different reasons. But I think first and foremost, just having that home opener and just reliving that moment all over again. And just on a positive note compared to what happened last year.
The 4 snaps, right. How can anyone forget? What was the atmosphere like at MetLife for the home opener?
I think it was pretty electric. I mean, I think people were excited, especially, you know, considering the Jets squeaked out a victory against the Titans last week there. And then obviously you got, you know, the Patriots on the short week there on Thursday Night Football in front of a million. So I think definitely, you know, people were excited to be out there. It was a great atmosphere, especially introductions and a lot of electricity for Aaron Rodgers, too, especially considering, you know, the Jets ended up scoring 3 offensive touchdowns for the third consecutive week. And, you know, the fans were chanting his name in the third quarter and also the fourth quarter. They were just saying Aaron Rodgers. And it's something that, you know, I think a lot of fans are just have an abundance of excitement just to see what this offense and this team can go this season.
There are a lot of different numbers we could highlight to point out the dominance for the Jets in this game over the Patriots. What are a couple of elements, though, that you think underscore how well New York played tonight?
I think the sacks, I mean, they were, I never really seen a Robert Saleh team pressure as much as what they did, especially using the blitz there. Typically, they rely on just using their front four to get pressure on opposing quarterbacks. But, you know, with no Jermaine Johnson, obviously, there's some Hassan Reddick situation there, you know, a little bit limited as far as pass rush. So they kind of use Quincy Williams. They use Jimmy Sherwood. They use some blitzes for the safeties. Chuck Clark even had a set. So I think, you know, everybody wants to talk about Aaron and the offense and, you know, deservingly so. I thought they did a really good job. But I think the defense was really just the star of the game and, you know, just underscored what they were able to do, especially considering they limited Lamondre Stevenson to 23 yards rushing and also Antonio Gibson only had 29, especially considering the Patriots. That's really bread and butter just to run the football. And I think the Jets did a really solid job just containing that, only holding New England to 78 yards rushing.
Not only the 7 sacks, but 15 other quarterback hits. Both Jacoby Brissett and Drake May were bottled up a good portion of the night.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, neither one of those guys threw over 100 yards. I mean, combined, they threw for 120 yards, but Brissett only had 98 yards passing. And, you know, Drake May came in to clean it up in the fourth quarter and only had 22. So, yeah, they definitely gave those guys fits throughout the whole night. And you can tell that was the game plan, getting pressure on those guys and trying to limit the run. And, you know, it worked definitely for the night.
Antoine Staley is fresh off Thursday Night Football at MetLife Stadium, covers the Jets for the New York Daily News, and is with us After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I know it's not Bill Belichick's Patriots anymore, but how big for the Jets to get this monkey off their backs?
Well, it's big because now they've won two consecutive games against the Patriots in the series, and I think it's huge. I mean, it's the first time it's happened since 2001 when they won three straight in the rivalry, and that was Bill Belichick's first going into his second year, and then that just shows you how much dominance Bill Belichick and the Patriots had over the Jets throughout their tenure, and they hadn't won consecutive games in the series since then. So just to be able to, you know, Aaron Rodgers talked about it earlier in the week, to kind of put their stamp on the rivalry, there's still some work to be done in order to do that, considering the Patriots won 15 consecutive games against the Jets. But now you kind of see the tide starting to turn a little bit. The Patriots are rebuilding. The Jets feel like they're close to, you know, contending for a championship. And the Jets did exactly what they had to do to a team that's beneath them on a talent level. So, yeah, I think it was all in all a good night for them. Probably left some points out there on the board, but, you know, you can't complain about a 21-point win at all.
How close are Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson to really making that connection and finding a rhythm that's consistent?
Yeah, I think you're starting to see just peaks and valleys of it, too. I mean, they connected five times tonight, but yeah, they had some off moments, too. I know it was a pass that was kind of behind Garrett, too, as well. Just, you know, it's going to take some time to get that chemistry down. I think, you know, you kind of saw it a little bit in the Tennessee Titans game when he was able to get the ball to Garrett, too. Now I think opposing defenses are keying on Garrett Wilson, and I think it's going to be interesting to see just kind of how, you know, the Jets and also Aaron just kind of handles that moving forward, too, especially considering, you know, that's his main target and teams want to take that away from him. And I think, you know, you kind of saw it with the Titans game, definitely saw it in San Francisco a little bit there. Did see some elements there trying to get Garrett the ball a little bit against the Patriots, but, you know, I think they, all in all, they tried to do a good job just kind of containing him as much as possible. He only had five catches for 33 yards, but I expect the chemistry to continue to grow throughout the year.
We know that Breece Hall can be an incredible weapon in the backfield, but we've now also seen Braylon Allen, not just with the two touchdowns last week, but getting some real good work again tonight. What's his role supposed to be with the team?
Well, I think it's good to have like two running backs and Braylon Allen and Breece Hall there. Just kind of, you know, good. Braylon Allen's a good short yardage back and also can take some pressure off of him, off of Hall. And, you know, also Braylon Allen can catch the ball at the backfield as people saw in the Titans game where he caught that touchdown. So, yeah, he can do it all. He's a do-it-all running back. I think he would start on, you know, a few teams in the league, including the Giants right now, if they are able to have him. But, you know, right now, you know, he's the second back to Breece Hall, and I definitely think he'll be a good compliment for them. And, you know, the Jets as a whole end up gaining 133 yards on the ground, and I think they're going to continue to use this two-headed attack to take some pressure off Aaron in the passing game.
What tells you that Aaron Rodgers is all the way back?
It's not even just the throwing, because I think when he's 70 or 80 years old, I think he's going to be able to throw. It's just about can he move? Can he move well? And I think we kind of saw that tonight in spurts, too. I mean, he ran the ball, you know, only three times for 18 yards, but it's just kind of the way he was moving in and out of the pocket, you know, on scrambles, also passing, his passing plays, getting, you know, some receivers more time to get open from defenders there. And I think that's kind of that old vintage Aaron Rodgers that we kind of saw with the Packers. He's never going to be the same mobility-wise because, one, he's 40, and two, coming off an Achilles injury, but I definitely think we're seeing signs that he's close, as close as he's going to be, and also more confident. I think he's more confident in what he was against the 49ers and also against the Titans, and I definitely think they showed tonight.
Jets beat writer Antoine Staley with us here after hours with Amy Lawrence. So how quickly in the postgame press conference did the question come up of that exchange between Rodgers and Robert Saleh on the sidelines after the touchdown?
Pretty quick. They talked about just getting up by two scores, and Aaron also joked about how Robert Saleh is not a hugger. And he, you know, it seemed like Saleh was going in for the hug. It seemed like Aaron was going, like, I don't know who was going in for the hug, but, you know, Aaron ended up saying two scores. And they've made an emphasis of trying to get up two scores and just kind of let their defense pin their ears back and, you know, get after the quarterback. And that's what you saw tonight, getting seven sacks and playing with the lead, something that the Jets have defense has not been able to play with the last couple of years regularly. And, you know, to have a guy like Aaron Rodgers can get you up, you know, by multiple scores there, it's going to be, you know, definitely dangerous for the rest of the teams in the league.
What is the latest update on Hassan Reddick?
None. Basically, it's kind of the same thing. Like, we're kind of in limbo there. Hassan, you know, the Jets don't want to give him a new contract or, you know, until he shows up in the building. Hassan Reddick doesn't want to show up until – he gets a new contract. So we're just kind of at a stalemate, and we're going to see who blinks first there. With Jermaine Johnson going down, they're going to have to do something on the D line there. Will McDonald's been out of this world. You know, he has to bet there. I mean, he's had 5.5 sacks in the last two games. So I think he's played really, really well. It's been a revelation there. If anything, it's kind of a blessing in disguise after, you know, the injury, obviously. Jermaine, nobody wants to see that, but Will stepping up, I definitely think, you know, that's a bright spot in all of this. But they would love to have Hassan Reddick on the other side of that, and that would definitely take some pressure off Quentin Williams and also Will McDonald. But it's nothing new to report on that, Ed, and I don't expect it will be in the coming days either.
Where do they miss Jermaine Johnson the most?
Just having that consistent pass rush, I think it's somebody that if you would have had a Will McDonald that's also emerging like the way that he did, and also have Jermaine Johnson and, you know, also Quentin Williams, who's also a menace as far as getting pressure on the quarterback there, that's where you miss too. And also, I talked to some of the players in the locker room. They say, you know, despite him being 25, 26 years old, Jermaine Johnson is a leader in that locker room. And I think, you know, just missing his leadership and the way that he, you know, rouse up the defense there. He is a quiet guy, but he's definitely an inspiration for a lot of even the veteran guys in the locker room. I know Tat McKinley talked about that with me, speaking to him throughout the course of the week there. But yeah, they miss him in a lot of different levels, but most importantly, like just being a consistent pass rusher that he is, he'll definitely be sorely missed. And now somebody else is going to have to pick up the slack. And it seems like Will McDonald is taking that to heart and having a tremendous couple of weeks there.
Looking ahead to the schedule, it's Denver in week number 4. What type of team on their schedule will give them the most trouble?
I think Minnesota and Buffalo are going to be very interesting. The teams they play in October, like, we're going to really learn about this team there. Minnesota is better than I think a lot of people expected. I mean, they beat up on the 49er teams that the Jets could not. Buffalo, I think, is playing at a high level, one of the best teams in the AFC there. I mean, sandwiches between that, you got Pittsburgh and another matchup with New England. Pittsburgh is leading their division right now with Justin Fields, and they have equally as good of a defense as the Jets do. And then you got the Texans on Halloween at the end of October. So, yeah, I think all of those teams are going to be formidable opponents there, and we're going to see how good if this Jets team is really contenders in the AFC. I think, you know, the way that they played at least tonight, definitely show that they could be a playoff team there, but they're also going to have to show the maturity to beat the teams that they're supposed to beat. They beat New England. Let's see now, can they go out and beat a Denver team that's, you know, doesn't have as much talent as them and also starting a rookie quarterback in Bo Nix.
Any chatter at all among either the media or at the Jets facilities about Sam Darnold and the start he's had?
Not yet, but I'm sure it's coming. I'm sure multiple people will be asked about that too. But, you know, the crazy thing about that, you know, I don't know if it's too many people that are still in that locker room,
right,
that was there when he was there. Maybe a little bit, but not too much. But that'll definitely come up the London week, I'm sure.
Antoine Staley, that's where you can find him online, covers the Jets and is with the New York Daily News. And we always enjoy talking to him, this time after Thursday Night Football and the Jets off to a 2-1 start. Thanks so much for a couple of minutes postgame. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
No update on Hassan Reddick, and of course Jermaine Johnson is lost for the year, and yet, against the Patriots anyway, their pass rush was enough, the containment was enough, the run defense was enough, that this was a lopsided affair. So the Jets with the 7 sacks, the 15 hits, the takeaway, only 78 yards rushing, neither quarterback with over 100 yards passing, no touchdowns allowed, and really the fourth quarter was almost entirely defense. But yes, a lot will be made of Aaron Rodgers. It is his first home game with the Jets since signing, gosh, more than a year and a half ago. So it was a long time coming for Jets fans, but they showered him with appreciation, and he got to throw a touchdown to his old friend, Alan Lazard. So we'll get more reaction as we head through the show. We're in the process of posting the After Hours Game of the Week. There's some, I don't know why I have hiccups. Why does this happen to me at the weirdest times? Because I'm weird. We have some weird matchups coming up in week number 3, and yet there are some great combinations as well. For instance, the Texans and the Vikings are both 2-0. We know that when it comes to some of these matchups that are cross-conference, it's based on previous record. Maybe it's based on two divisions playing each other in the 2024 season. So there'll be some odd ones, like the Broncos and the Buccaneers, like the Panthers with Andy Dalton and the Raiders, like Miami against Seattle. But it's all good stuff, and these wins count the same. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I'm John Aran, Pucks sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.